Okay, we're talking to Tom Barry, who was a WTMA newsman in the early 70s. When exactly were you at WTMA, Tom?
I came to WTMA in August of 1970. I had been working at WYCL Radio, which is in York, Rock Hill area, as news director, and of course a small market radio station. I was a one-man gang, and I was also doing an on-air stint as well as doing news for the station at the time. And so vacancy came up, and I applied with Franco Hunt, who was the news director at the time, and that's how I ended up coming to WTMA.
Were you excited about it?
I was very excited about it. I knew about the station before, because at the time, there were several of us radio news guys that had a somewhat informal radio news regional network. Basically, what we were doing would be calling each other in the early morning hours to check and see if there were any interesting stories out of their area. We had Tom Martin, who was the news director at WORD in Spartanburg, which is where I got my start in my hometown. And Frank O. Hunt was in Charleston at WTMA. Jerry Pate and Jay Latham were at WIS Radio in Columbia. And I was at WYCL in York, handling York, Rock Hill, and doing some stuff out of Charlotte at the time as well. And so we would talk with each other every morning just to swap stories so that we could have some more regional flavor and to get additional voices on the air. And so that's how I found out that Frank was going to have a vacancy, because his afternoon guy was leaving, and if my memory serves me correctly, that was Bill Sharp, who was going back to school at the University of Georgia after having worked there for the summer. And so I had the opportunity to go down and visit the station, and all I had to do was to walk in and meet Frank and look at the newsroom and talk with him for a few minutes, and that's all it took.
You think WTMA had a pretty good reputation, their news department anyway, before you came down?
I think it had a very good reputation. Frank O. Hunt was very well connected within the community. The station was very well respected, very connected in the greater Charleston community. It was where the local folks went for local news and information as to what was happening at the time. And it gave me a wonderful opportunity to learn a lot about the business, because I was still very young at the time, very green, and I was able to come in. Frank was able to teach me an awful lot, and I was able to develop my skills there working with not only Frank, but everyone else at the station there, and then was able to go on from there. It was a wonderful, wonderful time.
So you and Frank got along okay, huh?
Yes, we only had about three or four downright fights, but once Charleston PD came and got everybody separated, it was fine. No, we worked very well together. Anybody who knows Frank knows what a consummate professional he is and how easily he is to work with. And so that was one of the things that attracted me to the job itself, because I knew Frank from his reputation. I knew about the stories that he generated in the Charleston area, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. And plus, when I got down there, I was able to meet the other people on the staff, John Trenton, who was the program director at the time, and the other members of the staff who were just fabulous to work with. And of course, it was an absolute hoot working with Boob, because I did afternoons. Working with Booby and everybody else was just a treat.
Do you remember your impression of WTMA the first time you heard it on the air, not only as a news operation, but as a top 40 radio station coming from York and some of the other markets you'd worked at?
I was just absolutely amazed that the station had a very crisp, clean sound. You know, when you're into business, you listen for little nuances. You listen for little things like compression and other things that may be going on so that you get a better feel for what it actually sounds like from the technical side of things. But yet at the same time, I was listening. It was a very tightly run station. You could tell these were professionals. These were people who knew exactly what they were doing. And I wanted to be a part of it because I had listened to WTMA whenever I had been in Charleston before. And when I would come there, I would always listen to the mighty TMA. And so it was just an absolute delight to be able to get the opportunity to actually walk in the door and get a paycheck from them. At the time, we were owned by Ted Turner, because all of the paychecks were Turner Communications.
The news operation there was just you and Franco Hunt, right? Was there anybody else involved?
It was the two of us for the time that I was there. Frank would do mornings. I would come in about 10 o'clock in the morning, and if there was any street work that needed to be done, I would go out and do the street work and then come back and anchor the afternoon newscast. The newsroom itself was right at the end of the hallway as you come in from the front offices. We were right next to all of the production rooms and the large anteroom area outside of John Trenton's office where the jocks had their desks. And we had the old style teletype machine, which was in the newsroom with us. So anytime that mic would go on, you would always hear the teletype in the background clattering away. You'd hear the bells go off as part of the newscast itself.
What about John Trenton? What were your reactions working with the guy?
John was very much the professional. He ran a very strong operation. I thoroughly enjoyed my time working with John, although I didn't have that much in the way of interaction with him because Frank was primarily the go-between. But one story I remember about John, he was always so good and so on whenever he was on the air. I remember one morning, Frank was on vacation and I was pulling the morning shift. And I'm not sure what was going on with John, whether he had enjoyed himself a little too much the night before or whether he was actually physically ill. But it was one of those mornings where when there was something going on, whether there was some function, whether it was a record or it was a spot set or whatever it was, John's head was literally on the counter. The boy just could not move. Then whenever the mic would get turned on, I mean, it was like a different person. He was just there and just 110% full bore. And as soon as the mic pot would go off, you'd hear the head hit the counter again. But that was the kind of person John Trenton was. And everybody was very loyal to John. He ran a very good operation. I never heard of any dissension within the ranks, no back talking or anything like that. It was a very, very homogeneous group of us that worked together. John was doing the mornings. Bob Riley was coming in doing 9 to noon. Ted Bell was then doing, I believe, noon to 3, and then Booby would come in and do 3 to 7. And it was a very, very close-knit group. And it was just an absolute delight to work with them. It's one of those situations you always look for the kind of job where you can go in and you can do a good job, but at the same time, you're having fun with it. It's like the old cliche, geez, all this fun and a paycheck too? Wow.
Now, I understand that the news people weren't the best paid people on the WTMA staff.
I don't know if anybody was the best paid person on the staff. I'm sure you could probably get that from anyone. I was trying to remember. I was racking my brain to how much I was making at the time. I know that when I was at WYCL in York, I think I was making all of about $125 to $140 a week. And I know I came to TMA and I was thinking that I came for either $150, $155 a week. But to me, it was just absolutely fabulous because not only was I getting to go to a bigger market, I was getting to pursue my news career, which I dearly loved, and I was able to work with people that I enjoyed, that I respected. And all of that, you know, plus a paycheck increase too. I mean, geez, what's not to like?
What about Charleston at the time? What do you remember about the Lowcountry when you were here?
I dearly loved Charleston. I have adopted it as my second hometown outside of Spartanburg. I used to dearly love the city itself. Weekends when I was off or in the early mornings, I would just get out and enjoy the city itself. One of the first things that I did when I moved to Charleston was that I went out and I bought a t-shirt that I had for a number of years and that it said, "Not a tourist, I live in Charleston." And that was just the feeling that I had. It was just a wonderful city, wonderful people, just the neatest place to live. And then when I left, it literally broke my heart.
Now, why did you leave?
I left to come to Columbia. Jerry Pate, who was the news director at WIS in Columbia, which was then owned by Cosmos Broadcasting, had an opening in his news department. They were on a very aggressive hiring effort at the time because they were a combination shop with the TV operation at WIS. CBS television, Channel 10 in Columbia. And they were separating out, and they wanted to have their own radio identity. And so Jerry was hiring people. He brought in Don Rollins, who was from the Atlanta area, who was anchoring mornings. And Jerry called me in Charleston and asked if I would be interested in coming up anchoring their afternoon drive newscasts. And they were doing news blocks. They were doing 15, 30-minute news blocks in the early to mid-1970s before anybody even thought about going to any kind of an all-news format. Geez, what is that? And so it was an opportunity to come back to Columbia. I had been at the University of South Carolina as a student before I left, and I was able to come back to Columbia, work at WIS, and then go back to school and finish up my degree.
Now, when did you leave WTMA?
I left WTMA in 1971, and I was trying to think. I was at WTMA for, I believe, right about a year.
All right. Where did you work after WIS?
I stayed at WIS for a number of years. Actually did two stints there. Left in about 1977 to go across the street, literally, over to little FM station in West Columbia that several of the WIS people had gone out and bought. And I went over there to set up a news department and ran a three-person news department over there for several years, and then went back to WIS to be a morning news supervisor, an anchor of morning drive newscasts, and also did some work as a regional correspondent for what was at first AP Radio, which then became, of course, it's now AP Network. So I was one of the first regional correspondents that they had. And then left in 1983 from WIS in what we of the WIS Alumni Association refer to as the Day of the Long Knives, when there were about 12 of us at the station that were fired within about a 45-minute period one morning. It was budget cuts, and so it was one of those situations where, even though I had a long tenure with Cosmos Broadcasting, it was one of those situations where the budget gets cut, people have got to go, and so I went.
And you're working for the state of South Carolina now.
Since 1983, since leaving the radio business, I've been with the state's Department of Health and Environmental Control. I came over here to establish a public information office and a organizational office that works in liaison with the news media. So I still stay in contact with a lot of the people in the news business. And that was one of the things that I wanted to be able to do. I really never did want to get out of the business, although after 17 years in it, I was beginning to get a little burned out. But I wanted to try to look around and do other things, but I still wanted to try to maintain some kind of connection with the broadcasting side of it, because that had been such a dear love of mine. And since literally 1963, in my hometown of Spartanburg, when I started working at WSPA radio back then. So I've been here now for, gosh, 21 years and staying with it, but still like to keep an eye on what goes on in the business. When I go to Charleston, I still listen to WTMA. I always, when I drive by there and look down at the end of Orange Grove Road, right there in the marsh, the station there, I've been to visit it a few times before they moved to the new location. Boy, that brought back old memories, because I always thought about things that happened in that building. I know when one of the times when I was there, we had a snake get into the building, ended up in the transmitter area and got fried. Transmitter trip blew off the air, and everybody was running around. What's going on here? Oh, some snake got in there. Oh, geez. Squirrels would get in there, usually with the same results. It was always a pleasure to go to work. It was one of those situations where you just dearly love the job. I love the people. Miss it terribly.
How has radio news changed since the early 1970s compared with what you're hearing on the radio today?
It's still very similar in the fact that from the radio side, you're spending most of your time in the studio working the phones, because the radio news business, there are not a lot of people working in those newsrooms. If you have more than one or two people working a radio newsroom, you consider yourselves blessed. And Franco and I would just generally stay in the station because we had so many newscasts. We had one coming up, always coming up, always coming up. So you're always preparing copy and getting things ready to go for that. And then trying to work the phones to stay on top of whatever might be happening. And, oh, yeah, you turn the scanner on and see what's happening with the cop shops and with the fire departments and the EMS services. And so you're still involved with a lot of the breaking news, because that's where people would go if there was something happening, if something was going on and people wanted to find out about it immediately, they'd turn on the radio. And I would like to think that still it's the same kind of thinking, because I know that's what I do here in Columbia. And if there's something going on, I'm going to turn on the radio and go to that newsroom to see what's going on. And so I think from that perspective, there's still an awful lot of that going on. Obviously, the business has changed because now you've got stations that are doing nothing but news, all of the news talk formats, everything now that you see WTMA Today working. And so it has changed, but a lot of it is still the same.
What about the radio network news? At the time that you were here at WTMA, they were a mutual affiliate, and I don't think they carried that many mutual newscasts in the clear, but radio news from a network level, has it improved any, or do you think it's about the same?
It has certainly improved because you have more choices now. When we were doing news there, we didn't run many of the network newscasts, but boy, we would strip the bejesus out of it. We would take the voicers, the actualities, because we wanted to do everything locally. And so that was the philosophy. So we spent a lot of time taking material off the network feed from the newscast itself and from the spot feeds that would come down at various points during the day, and then use that material. But everything was always with an eye toward how can we localize the story? What is something that we can relate to Charlestonians about this? What is this that we can tell people in the Trident about this particular story and how it affects them locally? So we were always looking around, how can we tie this with something that might be going on here in the Trident area, and so that we can get that hook, we can get people listening. But the network itself, we didn't use an awful lot. We would generally just use it for material for our own newscast.
What about some of the other folks that worked at WTMA? Do you remember any of the night people you worked with?
I remember some of the night people we had. One in particular that I helped to get to Charleston was a friend of mine that I worked with in York at WYCL. The gentleman's name was Bill Towery, who used the name John Scott or J.J. Scott. The night guy left, and Jack Daniels, and I cannot remember his name, but he was working the overnights. Jack moved into the night slot, and so that left the overnight slot vacant. And so I saw John Trenton, and I said, John, I've got a friend of mine up in York who's very good at production, bright guy, really good, got a fairly good set of pipes, and would probably jump at the chance to come down here. And so Bill came down to Charleston, met with John, and then came to work at TMA, initially doing overnights. Then he moved to nights, and then he moved into day slots and was doing production. JJ moved into that slot very quickly. It was a situation where he came on board and was there for quite some time in the early to mid-1970s. In fact, after I came to Columbia, when I got married, I asked him if he would be one of my groomsmen, and he came up here. One of the funniest things that I ever saw in my life was JJ had a Harley, and he drove to Columbia with our wedding present on the back of his Harley. He had gotten us an oversized Pawleys Island rope hammock that he had strapped crosswise across the back wheel of the Harley. So he looked, coming up the Interstate 26 to Columbia on his Harley, looking like he has this tail wing on the back of his Harley. It's the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life, because he was driving up the interstate, long hair blowing in the breeze, and then got this huge hammock hanging on the back of this Harley.
You know, J.J. Scott eventually became program director when John Trenton decided that he couldn't do it anymore when he got the promotion to general manager. I believe that J.J. was the PD.
I believe he was, and was there for some time before moving on to Chicago at WFYR, is where he went when he left Charleston. He was there for a good while, and I would like to think, at least from the interaction I had with him and hearing from some of the other folks, did a pretty good job while he was there. As I mentioned before in the conversation, working with Boobie Nash was just an absolute hoot, because Boob was always the practical joker. He was always doing things, but he was always terribly, terribly supportive. And if I would blow a newscast or make some mistake or something would happen, Boob was always there saying, well, don't worry about it, we'll get it squared away the next time. Or if he was late getting into a newscast, which of course never happened, and so he'd always come down the hall, don't worry, we'll take care of it next time, I'll get it to you on time, don't worry, I'm not going to make you wait, don't worry about it. And then light up another cigarette and go back to the control room and everything would be fine. But, oh gosh, it was just such fun.
How about Bob Riley?
Bob, I generally didn't have a whole lot of interaction with, because Bob was working the morning side at the time, working, I believe it was 9 to noon at the time. And generally, when I would come in the mornings, I'd come in, check with Frank, see if there was anything going on, and then I generally head out to go cover whatever assignments needed to be covered to get some tape that we could come back and then use for the newscasts later on in the day. And then Frank would go out at middays, a lot of times after wrapping up the newscast, so that he could put together the public affairs show that we had every Sunday morning called Charleston Speaks. And if anybody knew what Frank was doing, he was going to the civic club circuits, and he was taping the speeches, and then he would come back, and he would say, well, okay, well, this was a pretty good speech, and he'd just run the speech. And that was Charleston Speaks. So a lot of times I would come in the morning and then would immediately head out again. So I didn't have a lot of interaction with Bob. Ted, on the other hand, of course, Ted was working early afternoons at the time, very professional, very smooth, just straightforward. You knew exactly what was going to be happening with Ted. Everything seemed to be right in order. When I was interviewing for the job, Frank asked me, have you looked at any place to stay while you're down here? Have you looked at apartments or anything like that? So that, first off, gave me a pretty good indication that I was doing pretty good in the interview. And then he followed it up with, well, let me introduce you to our engineer here, because I want to introduce you to Bill Dudley. If you guys hit it off, you know, who knows, maybe you could share an apartment with Bill or something like that. And that was how I met William Garland Dudley III. So I moved to Charleston and moved in with Bill, and we lived at, if I remember correctly, I think it was the Woodmere Apartments. It was at the other end of Orange Grove Road. So it was literally a straight shot to the station from the apartments. And Bill's apartment was always the center of some type of activity going on. And if it wasn't there, then sometimes we'd go over to John Trenton's, but we didn't stay at Trenton's an awful lot because Mrs. Trenton was, I don't think she was accustomed to all the police cars being in the front yard. So there would always be something going on at Bill's place, especially on weekends, because that's when Bill would do a lot of his work at the station. You know, in the early morning hours on Saturday and Sunday mornings, Bill would be going in, tweaking on the transmitter, doing whatever work needed to be done. And of course, well, Bill's not around. Well, geez, well, let's see, what's going on? Well, we'll make something go on. And so there was always some kind of activity going on. One of the guys at the time with the station, one of the night guys, was living out on Isle of Palms, had gone out and had a winter rental of one of the resort properties. And so if there wasn't anything going on at Bill's place, we were all going out to Isle of Palms or just having some kind of get-together. We were a group that was very, very close, not only on the air, but off the air as well.
Did you ever think that with living and working with Bill Dudley, the guy would end up being a multimillionaire and owner of many radio stations, including WTMA years later?
I scratch my head to think that this is one and the same individual. I heard that, and I'm thinking to myself, this is the same Bill Dudley that I remember? What happened? Did he grow up? What went on here? Is this his evil twin cousin who just suddenly appeared? No, seriously, Bill was just a wonderful gentleman, obviously. Very, very bright. And it didn't really surprise me to learn that he had done so well in the business itself. On one hand, it was a big surprise, but yet on another hand, no, I could see Bill doing that.
What do you think WTMA meant to Charleston during the early 70s? How important was the radio station to this area?
I think it was synonymous. I think it was just literally Charleston was WTMA and WTMA was Charleston. Everything that we did was just geared toward what is it that we can do for Charleston. At the time and in those years, it was WTMA and, oh yeah, there were a bunch of other radio stations that were around there, but geez, they had about as many listeners as the police calls did. And so it was one of those magical times that you always wanted to be part of because you knew that there was something magic about what was happening here. This was a station that was very much a part of the community. I would go into businesses, and being in radio, you have that wonderful anonymity of not having your face immediately recognized, but you would speak up and you would just start talking and people would look up, oh, I know you. You work at TMA. And it was never WTMA, but it was TMA. Or, oh, you work at the mighty TMA. We used to think to ourselves, and there probably was a little bit of truth to it somewhere, that, geez, you know, the station could be blown off the air and then 3 years later would still be number one in the books. Because it was one of those situations where the station was just so dominant. It was so good from all aspects, from the engineering side, the crispness of the sound of the station itself, to the people who were on the air, to the people that were out selling the station, representing the station. We did a lot of remotes. We did a lot of things out in the community, and it showed because there was always a very, very close bond between the station and the community it served.